Hello, I'm Robert Bounds, and this is the Monocle Culture Show. This week, we've raided the bookshelf, and the title we've selected is Out of the Woods, a new memoir by the writer and editor of The Quietus, Luke Turner. Centred around Epping Forest, the woodland that connects East London to Essex, we traverse Turner's relationships with lovers, his parents, music and nature, as he gets to grips with his religion and his sexuality. It's a book that jumps through a few genres, nature writing, memoir and a sort of psychogeography, that imaginative plumbing of history's depths to find the nature and habit of a place and to learn if we can't help but repeat that history. There's something of a haunting about Turner's book. The forest haunts him, and to an extent, he haunts it. Such is his desire to spend time in and understand it and himself. There's a lot in Out of the Woods, and to help cut away the ivy and splash joyfully about in the dirty, filthy, mucky puddles, you'll see what I mean. I'm joined by the novelist and critic and lava skier, Alex Preston, and the author and adventurer, Dan Richards. Welcome both to the programme. Lovely to have you here. Before we jump into those mucky puddles that I prefaced, let's talk about the feel of the book. Alex, it's very personal. You're right in Luke Turner's head, in his life. There is not a lot spared. What is it like to be in Luke Turner's universe?
Well, it's a very sad book, and it's a book which gestures towards redemption without ever giving that redemption. And I actually think that's what's most interesting about it, that it seems to be of a part with a type of creative nonfiction with which we're very familiar, which is, somebody who is in a bad place and finds cure in nature. And actually what this book is about firstly, just as Jaws is not a film about a shark, this is not really a book about the woods or about Epping Forest. It is a book that is about three things. It's a book about bisexuality specifically, and the in-betweenness and the lack of identity that Turner's bisexuality confers upon him. It's a book about religion. He's the child of a Methodist preacher, and I think actually for me the most brilliant pieces of writing in it are about his relationship with his parents and with a religion that both casts him out and continues to call to him. And thirdly, it's about nature writing and the kind of sham of nature writing. And for all of those reasons, I really enjoyed it. I think that there are many kind of things to pick away at in it, but as a book, I thought it was completely compelling.
Yeah, Dan, it, as I said, not many blushes are spared in his sort of depiction of some of his sort of almost addictive behaviour. And as Alex says, this is sort of played out in what is what most people think of, maybe still, but certainly maybe in a literary arena, of the pastoral forest. We're not in a pastoral forest in Epping Forest, are we?
No.
We are kind of in a little bit of an over... It seems like it's got the vibe of an overgrown lay-by in it at times. It's a mucky place.
Yeah, it is. And, I mean, one of the things... This idea of the pastoral, I think, that's perhaps associated with this word forest, but forest itself means hunting grounds for the king. And really what, Out of the Woods is, it's a kind of questing, a kind of hunting that goes through. It's a gesturing kind of towards and seeking out of some sort of, I suppose, epiphany that never quite comes as you would expect. It feels like the author is going into this kind of arena to find something, and he himself does not know what that is. And so there's a great deal of unpacking of what it could be throughout, with flashbacks to other things that have happened to him. And as a result, you kind of get lost in these woods, and you have an unreliable narrator, because I think he, as he's writing, is almost discovering as he goes.
I think that's so brilliant, because actually I think always when you're reading something autobiographical like this, you're reading two books at once. You're reading the book that the author thinks they are writing, and then you're reading all of those subtexts and all of those little hints and clues that are a deeper truth. And I think that this book has so many layers, and there are so many moments where you're seeing how lost he is, and you're thinking, right, well, what are the solutions? What is being hinted at there? And I think right at the kind of centre of the book is There are a series of really difficult to read passages about the sexual abuse that Turner was subjected to as a young man. And they are this strange in-between space where he was absolutely not of a legal age for sexual contact with sexual activity with other men. But he was interested in it. He was, it's really, really complex and brilliant. I've just read two books by Alexander Chi, Edinburgh and How to Write an Autobiographical Novel. And in both of them, he's brilliant on the in-betweenness of these early experiences of sexual contact and how they provide a blueprint for what comes after. And I think, again, that's one of the things that this book is really about.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. The idea of the unreliable narrator as authors, the pair of you. At what point is your editor? First of all, I wonder if you feel that Luke Turner realised he was writing this and realised how many sort of layers of the onion there are in this, and whether your editor actually kind of goes, well, what are you trying to do with this book, or whether they allow you your rope and you either hang on it or not. Do you know what I mean? I wonder how conscious that is as an editorial decision to kind of allow that unreliable narrator status to stay in the book, actually.
I think there's a kind of piecemeal nature to the book by the fact that a lot of it is episodic, because I think it originally came from a series of essays that Luke Turner wrote for the Caught by the River, the online blog about nature and music, and nature and music, and sort of mapping a sort of link between that. And the idea of maps in general, the idea of kind of piecing something together, sort of run through it. But it does have, I felt anyway, the kind of feeling of something that is almost a palimpsest. You're kind of like, you have these different areas and you almost need some distance to see the full picture. And I feel that the author, in writing the book, has sought to give himself, by putting his experiences and memories and these very formative sort of moments of his life on the page, he seeks a kind of distance. And by putting it out into the world, I think he's trying to both kind of like offer it as his, you know, very filmic and quite impressionistic sort of life, and saying, here is what I am, here is how I am, how am I? He's saying that to both the reader and, I think, himself.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think actually one of the problems with the book, which as I say, I enjoyed, but that episodic nature and exactly what you're talking about, this idea that actually he doesn't quite know what he's trying to say here, I think that leads the end of the book to have a slight sort of fizzling out to it. There's a trip to Berlin, which seems to me to be largely pointless in the overall narrative arc. There is a lot of wandering. It is about wandering in the woods. And yet, necessarily, once you have completed a certain number of circuits, there is a diminishing sense of returns in terms of what we understand and what we know. But just to come back to your question, Rob, about when, and I'm really interested.
The editor's hand on the tiller.
Yeah, I'm really interested in Dan's answer to this as well, because I'm a huge admirer of his books. I've only written one non-fiction book, and I was very keen sort of to keep myself out of that. And yet, of course, the more you try to do that, the less you achieve it. And but my editor kept saying, well, could you tell us a little bit more about what was happening to you at that point and what you were feeling? And so I think that almost the opposite you get from this, where Luke Turner has clearly sat down and said, I am going to tell everything. And, you know, actually there's some stuff where I was like, I'm not sure that I need to know this much about it. But I think that the urge from the writer is actually always to withhold rather than to give over everything.
Which is, in a way, perhaps why the book is compelling, in as much as it's compulsive. In the several and senses of that
like
word,
that to read,
throwing
well.
Things at
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and it feels quite unedited. It feels, I think that's why I found it an attractive place to be, despite some of the tough to read passages. It is that I was kind of swallowed into that world. I believed everything he was saying, and he didn't know what he meant about. He didn't know what the truth of his experience was. He felt that, as he said, he would find it by the end of writing this book. The writing of it is the walk. Whether it's a circular journey or it's an A to B journey. I kind of felt that I felt the honesty of it was compelling and charming. Alex, you mentioned in your first answer the sham of nature writing. Where are we in this great, it's been a big deal for 5-7 years, maybe longer, And Dan, obviously, you've written in that space yourself with Robert McFarlane. Where are we in the genre?
In financial analysis, there's something called the Elliott wave theory, which every market cycle goes through these five waves, apparently. You know, the first one is full of wonderful stuff and everybody's feeling great. Then there's, you know, it goes on and on. And finally, you're in this desperately kind of running out over the void, just trying to file that last piece of nature writing before the whole thing collapses. And and I feel we are in the final fifth stage of the Elliott wave theory.
I think I've got
of nature
that with buying
writing.
My house. By the most expensive time in history.
I just feel that it is almost impossible to write anything in this mode that does not carry about it an air of pastiche, an air of inhabiting clothes that have been worn many, many times before. I wrote As Kingfishers Catch Fire 3 years ago, and even then I had a feeling that what I was trying to do was to pull together something that had already happened. And, you know, if you look, whether it was Helen MacDonald or, you know, certainly Robert McFarlane, that initiated something. I find very, very little out there at the moment that I'm reading that is any way bringing anything new. Now, what I think this does do, and I think something that has gone on more broadly, is it is exploring the kind, as we said, the Edgelands. There's a brilliant book by Michael Simmons Roberts and Paul Farley called Edgelands, but it's what Victor Hugo referred to as the bastard countryside, where this liminal space in between, and of course this very clear parallel for Turner, the liminal space between the city and the country, the liminal space between heterosexuality and homosexuality. And I think that's, you know, that is why this is a book that one should read, notwithstanding it doesn't do anything new as far as nature writing goes.
It's such a sort of perfect parallel to draw. There is the liminal space between those two things that, as I say, have this strange kind of dirt. It has a feel of the brush at the edge of a car park about it, so much of it. And there is that feeling of that's how he regards some of his sexual adventures and misadventures, that they are... They're not a cool lake that he's jumping into. They're kind of like,
I mean, I would bring in the word hybridity as well. And I think a lot of the nature writing books that are coming out at the moment, they have something that you know with something that perhaps you don't and wouldn't expect to be there. To go back to Robert McFarlane, I think it's quite sort of notable that his most recent book is actually called Underland and explores underground, because perhaps that's a sign that everything above ground has been absolutely rinsed as far as nature writing goes.
Do you know what this book did remind me of? And actually, it's a book that I didn't feel got the kind of praise and prominence that it should have had, was Uprooted by Nina Lyon, which is On the Trail of the Green Man. It's an extraordinarily eccentric book by, I think, an absolutely brilliant writer, in which she, again, reveals absolutely everything of herself. And it is a history of the Green Man, the kind of foliate figure from the Old Man of the Woods, which is something we get from in Turner as well, but also about her own, you know, psychiatric episodes, her own extraordinary attempts to kind of infiltrate a sex cult. It's brilliant and it's eccentric. And like Turner, it's totally British. I mean, I think that's the other thing, that an American could not have written this book, I don't think. Mm. I think there is something so peculiarly English, and it is that sort of shabby, you know, M&S suit going to the pond with a shopping trolley in
slightly
it.
Slightly diffident, slightly apologetic.
For a quick knee trembler under the hornbeam. And it's just, you know, it is. There's something, and actually, again, to capture the not only the sadness of that, but also the beauty, is, I think, you know, quite an achievement.
I'm going to make it a personal mission to, next time I'm in a bookshop, to swap the dust jackets from Luke Turner's Out of the Woods and Bill Bryson's Into the Woods.
That's going to
see what people make.
Mess with a few Christmas presents.
That's
yeah.
right. Interesting bunches.
One other thing, Alex, I know you wanted to talk about, was Will Ashen's book, Strange Labyrinth. Mm. And two very similar books coming out at similar times. And we talked about the state of nature writing, the state of personal memoir. These two things I like trains running down the same track, and it's a strange thing.
So I interviewed Will Ashen for Strange Labyrinth, which it must have been a couple of years ago it came out, and they are very, very similar books. Will's, I think, to me is more humorous, but only because he's just sort of having a fairly run-of-the-mill midlife crisis and goes out into Epping Forest as a way of trying to resolve that or to bring some, to have the same sort of epiphany that Turner's looking for. But the fact that they really tread so similarly, the fact that they both come from a music background, that Will Ashen is was a record producer, Luke Turner writes about music, it's uncanny. And I can imagine Luke Turner as he opened or heard about Strange Labyrinth thinking, somebody's sort of written my book for me. And the fact that I was still gripped and interested by Turner's book, having read such a similar book about such a similar place so relatively recently, I think again is credit to it.
One of the things I really loved, actually, going back to the book itself, was the chapter called The Understory. Where he lives in the house in Seven Sisters, which is a house that has been lent to him, the whole house, I think, by a singer. Is he the singer in Throbbing Gristle? Great name for a band.
Coyle.
Yeah. And he lives in this room, and it feels like the house is being absorbed into this overgrown garden that it sits in. Yeah. And it's a very rare place in Seven Sisters, up in near Tottenham in North London. It's a pretty gritty urban part of the city. And he finds a sort of pastoral, the most pastoral thing in the book seems to be the bedroom with the kind of ivy tapping against the window.
And these two huge penises on the mantelpiece.
Right. Yeah.
I know we're going to talk about it in a bit, but it reminded me of the cover of Dogman Star, the Suede song. And
exactly.
Suede kind of like run through the book as kind of one of the few kind of ideas of queer or sort of like... gender,
well, I think specifically bisexual identity, because I think that's what this is about. This is about the fact that actually there is a gay community which has its own identity and its own rules, and there is heteronormativity, and there is this thing in between which is actually rejected by both.
You don't get any respect for it.
You don't
thing.
Get any. Yeah. Exactly. And there's
after all the work I put
you're
in.
You're just trying to get a shag with anyone. Is what he
but,
says.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
There's a brilliant passage about the loneliness that comes from being in that in-between space. That famous Brett Anderson moment where he was, he says, I'm a bisexual man who's never had a gay experience or whatever. I love the way that Turner tries to reclaim that. I felt like what he found in Anderson was a figure that he could aspire to and someone who said, hey, this is a way of being, and by the way, it's cool and it's okay.
Yeah. And they opened a door, I think, Suede, in that way of kind of it being a kind of smuggling in this kind of apparently seedy, apparently dirty. But they're saying, it's amazing. Look at the fun we're having.
Yeah.
Look at how, you can have the sort of glamour of Roxy, and you can have the kind of despair and maudlin brilliance of the Smiths. And you can also have all of this, this central relationship between Brett Anderson and the guitarist Bernard Butler was a kind of this roiling mass of kind of, mutual dislike at times, but you sense that they really loved each other as well. And the fact that it all kind of like imploded in such a sort of, I think soap opera is a good word for it, because again, it's very British. You have this sense of camp, you have this sense of kind of people from lowly backgrounds kind of reaching beyond their station to kind of, claim the airways, and it's gorgeous and glittery, and, we're all wearing eyeliner and, we're completely off our faces in a taxi. How glamorous is that? That's the,
it's a very English kind of glamour.
Very much of that. I live in Haywards Heath, and I am constantly looking towards London, and London is at the epicenter, and I want, and that sense that as soon as I get to London, there are going to be other people like me, so Turner grew up in St Albans. I think it's almost the kind of the northern mirror of Brett Anderson's Haywards Heath.
There is in Brett Anderson's memoir, Cold Black Mornings,
which is very good,
wonderful.
Yeah. I love that book,
and there is exactly that moment where he stands, he physically stands stands on Hayward's Heath or the village that he's from, yeah, just down the road from it, the platform, to stare up the railway tracks towards the glamour and glitz of London. And then, of course, he gets there and there's still like a tide mark on the bath. And I feel like it's such a sort of suede image, you know. Mm. And it's really interesting. The cover of that great record, Dogman Star. I remember having that first suede album at school, and it was kind of two guys kissing on the cover. Mm. And you kind of had to tell some boys that it wasn't. It was two girls. They just had funny haircuts, you know. And there was a moment which you kind of defined yourself by having that record
the other thing, which was that I had it, the vinyl proudly displayed, yeah, on the shelf of my desk at,
yeah,
school.
Yeah. Mm.
And that was, you know.
I know, so some people you could be, yeah, proud about it. To others you had to lie.
Well,
you know,
yeah, I just put up with the fact that people would throw things at me occasionally. But it's interesting. I was really interested, Dan, when we had a kind of brief chat about this, that Dogman Star was kind of the because when I think of Suede, I think of that the explosion of that first album and how extraordinary that was. Dogman Star for me was clearly their masterpiece, and yet critically and at the time it was largely lambasted by the press. Listening to them now, and I still listen to them a lot, and indeed Brett Anderson's son and my son had drumming lessons together, and I found myself in one of those kind of terrifying middle-aged moments where I was sitting next to him with each of us holding our lemonades, listening to our children playing music together. And from that moment, I was like, oh, I'd like to listen to Suede again. And that album holds up astonishing.
Did you tap him on the knee and tell him that?
Do you know what I did?
Clink lemonade bottles.
I did. I decided that he probably got enough of that. But I went back to Dogman Star particularly, and the power of some of those tracks is astonishing.
And it's never really been... That's never happened again in British music. I mean, if you think of the kind of idea of the operatic, if you think of ideas of this really widescreen guitar music with, you know, really questing impressionistic lyrics from a frontman who's really a frontman, in that exciting, accessible way that Dogman Star has.
And I also think so interesting that it came out of the moment of you know, loaded laddism Britpop, that this was something that...
The most blokey.
And that, you know, I mean, I remember, I saw Suede many times in concert, and the one that I remember being 15 and going to hear them at Brighton Pavilion and doing that thing that Turner talks about of looking around and feeling that I was amongst my people.
Mm. Yeah.
I think it was important because they were divisive. They weren't for everyone. You know, they were... Turner talks about being in the fan club, but not being, you know, being too shy to talk to anyone at gigs.
Yeah,
and I think
right.
that, in a way, you know, this is what the book's about. Turner's in the fan club. He kind of, like, he goes to all the places, but he's often passive, or he gets really involved. There's no middle ground.
Yeah, you're right. It's interesting. We come full circle with these things. The cover of that album as well... is the portrait of Chatterton, the sort of doomed poet in his Parisian garret as well.
Yeah,
it comes all back to that. There is something about male beauty, about that, as
and
you say.
And Byron is in there a lot.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly. It's all swept up in this big, slightly grubby, sexy, swinging both ways in a kind of wholesome and not way. These things all gel together somehow. Okay, thank you both very much, gentlemen, for talking us through Out of the Woods. We were going to have a blast of Suede. Should we have one before we finish? Should we have the Asphalt World?
Sometimes we ride in a taxi to the ends of the city, like big stars in the backseat, like skeletons of a soul pretty.
The Asphalt World, from Dogman Star, bringing us to the end of this programme. Out of the Woods by Luke Turner is out now, published by Weidenfeld and Nicholson. Thanks to my guests today, Alex Preston and Dan Richards, and of course my producer, Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time next week when we'll be speaking to Matthew Heineman, the director of A Private War, a new film about the late war journalist Marie Colvin, and Paul Conroy, the photographer who worked closely with Colvin towards the end of her career. But until then, from me, Robert Bounds, thanks very much for tuning in.